Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Wrestling Flashback. I am Sinbad, and I am joined by Katrair. We are going to be discussing 1993 WCW. This is the third week. We're going to be closing it out. Katrair, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I've been better. I've been sick the whole past, like five. Actually, since the last show, pretty much. I've been really sick. I had strep, and now I'm trying to get my voice back and. I don't know. It's been a crappy couple of days. But I just want to remind everyone, we are not a member of the Angry Marks, apparently. So we need to negative plug, apparently, now. I have no idea what happened with that. I thought we were on the website, weren't we? Or no? Are we not? What's up?
I thought we were, but they never ended up putting us up there. So I don't know.
Yeah, All right. All right, well, we either are or aren't part of Angry Mark, so go to angrymarks.com, everybody, and maybe check us out. I don't know. We'll find out. Okay. All right. So we were in August, at the end of August, actually. We were. I think we finished up August, didn't we? Or did we
Well,
not?
I think we still had the Clash of the Champions in August to go.
The Clash of the Champions in August. Okay, All right, go ahead with it.
Yeah, this was this had Davey Boy Smith against Big Van Vader on top, and let's see some of the undercard matches first. Well, I guess the big news out of this was apparently Brian Pillman had broken his ankle or something at one of the tapings like a few days earlier. So they had Arn Anderson and Paul Roma defeat Steve Austin and Lord Steven Regal for the tag team championships. Lord Steven subbing for Brian Pillman. What did you think of this match?
I remember that distinctly because they didn't. I don't think. At least as a kid, I actually watched this live. I watched all the clashes live and most of the pay per views because of Cheater Box. But you know, sometimes like those the Cheater Box back in the day, they were. Hit or miss, you know, sometimes it just didn't work, or you have to get like a new, like we had with Satellite, we had to get a new card or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, I remember watching this, and I remember as a kid, I didn't know why Regal was there. If they explained it, they barely explained it, and then like, it kind of made sense to me, you know, when I saw Pillman, you know, out there or whatever, but yeah, It was a good match. It was interesting too, because I was really a big fan of Arn Anderson. I always was, but Paul Roma just didn't do it for me ever.
Yeah, Arn and Paul Roma didn't fit as a tag team. It just looked too weird.
They weren't good at all.
Yeah, I mean not like Paul Roma was bad, but he just didn't fit here. I didn't like him anyway.
To me, he was always an opening card guy. I mean, he's not necessarily a jobber, but he could be like an open card guy. You know, lose some, win some, it doesn't matter, never get a title.
Yeah, or be like in a tag team. Like I really enjoyed him and Hercules as Power and Glory. I thought they were a tremendous team. It kind of got cut off too soon. But did you ever see them?
Well, yeah, I thought they were awesome. Did you think that they were like a tag team title type tag team or like a mid-card tag team?
I thought when they first started, I saw them, and I think they could have eventually been tag team champions. So, I mean, you had Hercules, who was also better in a tag team than as a singles wrestler. You know, you had the power guy, and you had the you know, kind of like the small high flyer and Paul Roma, so I think they complemented each other well, and they had an awesome finisher. So
they were a good team. I mean, I did like them. I did like them more so when I was older. When I was a kid, I didn't really like them. See, like, up until recently, old WWF footage was so much easier to get than old WCW footage was. Because it seemed like if you went to an old video store, it had, like, you know, every SummerSlam, every Survivor Series, all that stuff back until the 80s, and you could rarely find a WCW thing, at least in, like, the Chicago area. How was that? Was that the same for you?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, you could get, like, all of WWF, but they'd be very selective about the WCW stuff they put out. Like, you get one pay-per-view and, or, yeah, like, one pay-per-view, and then it would be, like, two more pay-per-views after that you get another pay-per-view. It'd just be, like jumping ahead, like, 2 months or something like that. It was weird.
Because I think what happened was they probably weren't as popular.
Yeah, and I don't think they WWF took their, like, home video stuff way more seriously than WCW did. Because WCW, up until this time, actually were coming up on a pay-per-view. Fall Brawl 93 was, like, the first three-hour pay-per-view that they put out, if I recall. Because before that, it had been, like, two-hour edited versions, or, like, some of the matches were edited down and some of the undercard matches were left off and stuff like that. I think they just didn't take their tag division seriously at the time, and they never ended up doing that. So
yeah, it was the Turner home video or whatever. I just have one quick question, just kind of off subject. Am I cutting out at all?
No.
Okay, I'm just making sure, because I had heard you, like, cut a little bit. I don't know if it was my phone or it's your phone. All right, well, I'll see you in the finished product, I guess. Also, a big deal about the show was Paul Orndorff finally lost the title.
Yeah, to Ricky Steamboat. Yeah, they did the Savage Steamboat WrestleMania 3 finish with the, you know, reverse body slam into the cradle.
And it was another. See, the thing is, Paul Orndorff at this time, to me, I thought Paul Orndorff in WCW was better than Paul Orndorff in the 80s. Even though he had that bad arm, he was having really good matches with almost anybody. And then put him in there with Ricky Steamboat on top of things was awesome.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I thought I preferred Orndorff in the 80s just because the stuff he was doing was so much, like, higher profile than anything he was doing in WCW. You know, the stuff with Piper and at the first WrestleMania, and then, you know, you go to the big feud with Hogan. That was, like, one of the hottest programs WWF ever did. But yeah, he was good in WCW. He had a good run here as the TV champion. He was good. I mean, he was one of those good heel mechanics, you know, that you have on the card that can just go out there and have a great match with just about anybody if you let him.
Yeah, you're just hearing the Ring of Honor side of me, apparently. I just want some work rate. I just want some Paul Orndorff work rate. That's all I cared about. Anything else major on the show?
The Shockmaster.
All right. I'm going to go ahead, because you have, like, such a, like, a vivid memory of almost everything. I'm going to go ahead and let you explain it. Because you'll get it in detail.
Okay. This was, they were doing a Flair for the Gold segment. It was Sting, Davey Boy Smith, and Dustin Rhodes were going to be teaming up at the next month's pay-per-view, Fall Brawl for the War Games. And they were going to be introducing their mystery partner. And then they were going to be facing Sid, Big Van Vader, and Harlem Heat. Which I thought was weird at the time. Harlem Heat had just gotten there, and they just kind of—I guess they were just going in there to do the job and the submission at the end. So they're at Sid, and them are asking where their partner is. He said, "Our partner's right here. Here's the Shockmaster."
Sure,
and he points.
Go ahead.
Okay. And he points right at the wall and says, "Here's the Shockmaster." And all of a sudden, you see somebody burst through the wall, and they've got this helmet on. I mean, in retrospect, this was a horrible looking outfit. Whoever thought this up was, I don't know, it must have been Dusty Rhodes, because he had on a Stormtrooper helmet that was painted silver with glitter on it, and I think he had on a cape. Well, anyway, he burst through the wall and immediately tripped face first, helmet off, and revealed to be a tugboat from WWF Natural Disaster Tag Team. And what happened was he burst through the wall, but in doing so, he didn't, like, kick the bottom boards to go through the wall. So that board was still there, though. He just burst through the middle of the wall, and he just, like, went down flat on his face. And Sid Vicious, in one of his greatest live moments of all time, you know, he's still playing up, saying, he's saying, like, oh, God, but he's doing it, like, he's, like, laughing. But it was just a tremendous debut. It was, like, one of the most hilarious live moments of all time.
I think I remember where it might have been in the shoot interview, but he said, like, when he did, like, a run through of that earlier in the day, and that board wasn't there. So he didn't know
okay.
It was going to be there. No one had told him that was going to be there. So then he tripped over it, and he definitely was wearing a cape, and the mask was that Stormtrooper mask with, like, glitter on it.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
Yeah, this was Dusty Rhodes' brother-in-law, Tugboat was. That's probably why I got this spot. So.
Yes, there was another little side tangent that we could go on real fast. They, you know, everybody knows I'm a big Cody Rhodes fan. And on one of those, what are they called? Those, like, a round table on 24/7, you know what I'm talking about? Those round table shows? On one of those shows, like, they had, like, one about, like goofy things that happened. And they talked about the Shockmaster. And apparently, Cody Rhodes, like, watched that happen and recognized him and called him Uncle Fred to all of his friends. Like, hey, I think that's my Uncle Fred. And that's a really funny story.
Remember, they even afterwards, they kind of had to change the character because, I mean, they actually played up, like, the, you know, he's just, like, just this big, goofy guy, and he's always, like, falling down or tripping or something like that. And they actually called him the Shockmaster, but they also called him Uncle Fred on TV. Because he's, like, Uncle Fred the Shockmaster. So yeah, that's where that comes from.
Which is
but,
really
yeah, this
funny.
Was, like, the beginning of WrestleCrap, I bet. I bet this was, like, when you think WrestleCrap, this is the first thing that pops into your mind.
The thing about WrestleCraft, just real fast, I remember when WrestleCraft first came out, and there was a lot of WCW things out there, but I always thought that website was really cool at the time. Like, when it first came out, it was really funny. That eventually grew to be, you know, kind of unfunny. But at first, it was pretty funny. And that was one of the main things they talked about. I think it won the Gobbledygooker Award or whatever it's called.
Yeah, the Gooker of the Year Award.
There was also that Road Warrior Hawk. Was it the Road Warriors Return, or it was only like
they had been building up Rick Rude and the Equalizer against Dustin Rhodes and Mystery Partner, you know, in the weeks leading up to this, and so they come out and Dustin comes out, and then all of a sudden you see. You see this car drive up, and all of a sudden, Animal gets out. You know, everybody's shocked, and so he comes in, and Rude starts laughing, and he says, "This isn't any surprise. We knew it was going to be you all along." But then he turns around, and Hawk's in the ring, and Hawk's actually the Mystery Partner, and I don't know why he would think it'd be Animal, and then wouldn't, you know, if he's preparing for Animal, why not prepare for Hawk, you know? Not like this is that big of a difference because, you know, an Animal, he didn't even end up staying. I mean, I think he was like the team captain like the next month, like managing the guys at the War Games match. But he had that back problems and had that Lloyd's of London life insurance policy. Yeah, policy. And he was collecting on that. So Hawk took his place and Hawk and Dustin won this match. It's weird seeing the equalizer with Rick Rude. I don't know. Just seems like it's like he should be so much lower on the totem pole.
Yes. And there's also kind of a squash match with Sting and Ric Flair against the Colossal Kong.
Yes. This was set up. Ric Flair and Harley Race had had a confrontation the Saturday before on TBS, and Flair ended up punching Harley Race in the mouth. So he challenges him to get a partner for another tag team match at the Clash against the Colossal Kongs. And so he goes to Sting, and, you know, Sting, last time he was with Flair, he ended up, he ended up kicked out of the Horsemen. So, but he offers him that shot that following Saturday after the Clash at the NWA title. So he takes it, and Sting pretty much wrestled this match all by himself, because I think Flair was pretty much just like on the apron the whole time. And he beat him in like 1 minute. So.
Yeah, this whole match was essentially just to get it's kind of funny how they did that. They put a big match, or they built for a bigger match on Saturday night, and they used the Clash of the Champions as almost like a little storyline thing, kind of like how TNA does. Like, you know, they'll do a match leading to a match on Impact, which is, you know, the similarity is just hilarious. All right.
Again, the Colossal Kongs with Harley Race, that's just weird. That's like Equalizer with Rick Rude.
Yeah.
Harley Race is managing Vader at the time, so.
Yeah, I really liked the Equalizer, actually. He was just like a big, goofy guy. But, I was always kind of a big fan of his. He was really funny.
Yeah, and eventually kind of, well, you know, the Dave Solomon thing will be coming up, you know, like in the next year, so.
Yes, but at the time I liked him.
Yeah, he was okay. I mean, he was out of Portland, I believe. He had wrestled out of there, so I'd heard it. Not like I hadn't heard of him before. But yeah. At this time, he was good. He was decent in the ring.
All right. To finish up August, there's quite a few house shows. Well,
let's say what happened in the main event real quick.
Go ahead with that. I apologize.
Big Van Vader pinned Davey Boy Smith in 11 minutes. And at the end, it was Cactus Jack made his return. He tackled Vader on the entrance ramp and then beat him up a little bit. And then Vader and Harley Race ran off and ended the show with Cactus Jack having his big return.
The thing is, I apologize for almost skipping that. It was kind of hidden, like in the thing. Where it's all, you know, written down. The thing about that was a huge deal. That whole thing was huge because I actually, because I was young, I followed those Lost in Cleveland things. And so I wanted Cactus Jack to come back, and I wanted him to go after Vader or whatever. And they kind of eventually dropped it, and you didn't really hear anything about Cactus Jack at all. You know, there was you heard nothing about it for weeks before that. You didn't hear anything. And then when he showed up,
I mean, the vignettes just kind of ended, and
they stopped.
Nothing else was said.
Yeah, there was nothing said. So, I mean, imagine watching that. Like, you know, you're watching this thing, and it's goofy, but, like, it's still, like, it's like watching a bad movie, but still getting no ending. You know, like, you still want to know what happens at the end. Well, you know, nothing happened, and it kept going and going and going. And then eventually, when he came back, it was awesome. The crowd was into it. Remember the pop he got when he came out? It was awesome.
Yeah. And remember the last time we saw him, he was clean shaven. So it was like this total transformation from one thing to the other, you know, like really quickly. And think about this Lost in Cleveland thing. I wanted to say this because I had watched the death of WCW or the rise and fall of WCW that WWE put out, and Dusty does a thing here saying, he put together all these, because he actually thought these were, like, really great when he put these together.
Movies, baby. The movie.
Yeah, and then he says, we were going to keep going with it, but, you know, Jim Hurd didn't like it, so he canceled the rest of them. I said, what? Okay, first off, Jim Herd had not been in WCW since, like, the end of 91. So he could not have possibly canceled these things.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was just bullshit right there. And I don't know.
ladies and gentlemen, that's Cotrera calling out Dusty Rhodes, calling out his bullshit. That's the kind of stuff we do here on Wrestling Flashback. All right. So we have that Cactus Jack return.
That's what we ought to do a show on is we ought to watch one of these old WWE documentary DVDs and weed out all the bullshit for the people.
All right, we could do that. We could definitely do that. I actually own that DVD, so I can do that whenever you want to. All right, so just to close out August after that, just kind of an idea of, like, the house show matches that are going on. Yoshi Kwan is there, and he's working with Brett Armstrong a lot. And one of the greatest things about it was, like, if anybody ever wants to go to the history of WWE.com, WCW 1993. One of the funnier things is, like, you know, they're pretty accurate with a lot of these results and stuff. And I actually remember some of these shows, you know, and it's like exactly how it was. But one of the results was on here was WCW TV champion Ricky Steamboat defeated Ricky Steamboat.
That's probably a hell of a match.
Yeah, probably was really good. Match of the year. And, pardon me. Sorry. I'm still under the weather, everybody. I pre-warned you in the thread. They kind of did a lot of Sting beating Vader in non-title matches. It would happen all the time.
Yeah.
And also, one thing we did notice about the Clash was Johnny B. Badd beat Max Payne, and he won... he got his Bad Blaster back. So something that was already his that got stolen had to be put up in a match to get it back, which is awesome. I love when they do things like that. But going around, like, the house shows, they were doing the Rick Rude, Dustin Rhodes best 2 out of 3 falls matches. Sting and Davey Boy Smith versus Vader and Sid. And then, like, Ric Flair and Orndorff all on top, they would do those over and over. And, like, what great shows those would be. And also, also all the people on the F4W message board that didn't know who Charlie Norris was, on one of these cards, Charlie Norris defeated Chris Benoit. See, Charlie Norris not only was a great wrestler, the freaking, if he was there that day when, you know, Chris Benoit went violent, he could have possibly saved them, because he obviously has the key to beat Chris Benoit here, as he did in Melbourne, Florida, August 23rd, 1993. So that's pretty much the end of August.
I never would have thought of that.
well, there you go. All right, go ahead. We're at the Saturday night tapings in the very end of August. What's going on?
Well, first, I think we should say that talk about the Ric Flair Sting match that got set up on the Clash of the Champions. Yeah, which is, it went 40 minutes and was like, it was an awesome match. Like, one of the better ones those two ever had, I think. And in the end, Sid Vicious interfered and Sting got counted out. So, but it was a great match. I was surprised to see it go so long on TV like that, just like on the Saturday Night Show.
They did that a lot, though. They would do a lot of, like, the main events. A lot of times they would give them time, not 40 minutes, but a lot of times you would see matches go at least, you know, 18 to 25. I mean, that would happen very often on Saturday night. That's what was great. It was, you know, they would give them all time. And, you know, we don't, you know, we get 3-minute matches all the time now. So I'm, you know, I'm not a really big fan of that. Current day wrestling. So, where they're going now, it seems, they're building, I'm trying to even think what they are building right now.
They're building the Fall Brawl.
They're going to Fall Brawl, the War Games. And they have Sting, Davey Boy Smith, Dustin Rhodes, and the Shockmaster. And you kind of mentioned before that the Harlem Heat were teaming with Sid and, who was their partner?
Big Van Vader.
Big Van Vader, of course.
Yeah, no, actually, I think Road Warrior Hawk was originally supposed to be in the Shockmaster's place because like the following Saturday, which had been taped, you know, like maybe a couple of weeks beforehand, Big Van Vader did a promo where he said, we're talking about the War Games, and he's talking about Sting and Davey Boy and Dustin Rhodes and Hawk, their mystery partner. I was like, that was weird.
It was, and the thing about that is, the Clash was normally live, right?
Yeah. Always.
And they would, yeah, and it was, they would tape the Saturday nights before that. That's what throws everything off, is they would do these shows, and, you know, it's hard to follow them. Or if you were there live, can you imagine going to those tapings? And, you know, honestly, because, like, in the early 90s, you know, the people of Atlanta, you know, just wrestling being, like, a fixed thing wasn't really as common knowledge as it is now. You know what I mean? So it had to be really confusing for a lot of those people.
People knew, but they didn't know to what extent, I think. You know, exactly.
Yes.
You know, the way we know how everything works now, you know, no, people didn't know back then. I mean, some people, all they know, but all they are able to read are, like, the after magazines and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
you just don't know how it's done. But when taping, like, we talked about that last week with those worldwide tapings and taping so far in advance, just, I mean, we know what it is, but it's just kind of, I don't know, in front of an audience, it's kind of insulting, I think.
Oh, definitely. It's definitely insulting. But the thing about that was they would give away free tickets to anybody that wanted to show up. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
It wasn't the same fans every time. I don't think, because it always seemed like there was a lot of different people there.
Well, the worldwide tapings, they were at... you know, they were at Disney, so I think there was, like, same thing like TNA, you know, get in free. It was just like an attraction.
Yeah, no, it was.
Like.
Yeah, it was, but they would do different shows. You know, like, they wouldn't record them all at once, I don't think. I thought they would do, you know, different shows with different people there. I could be wrong, but I thought it was, you know, it was almost like an attraction, like almost like a show.
Yeah, well, I mean, because
that's
they take them, like, just, like, one after the other. I don't know if they, like, filed people in and out, you know, or just kept the fans that were there. And they had the yay and the boo signs and stuff like that. I thought that. I don't like stuff like that.
Yeah,
you know,
well, the only reason I think that is because imagine going to Disney and paying to go to Disney, and no one's going to, like, no family is going to sit there for 8 hours watching all WCW worldwide shows. Like,
yeah.
They're not going to stay there all day. They're going to go do other things because it's at Disney. So I'm almost positive that's how it was.
It's not like one of those marathon WWF TV tapings in the 80s where you're stuck there.
Oh,
I mean,
you can go to the...
I mean, you can leave if you want. I was actually lucky enough never to go to one of those.
Oh, no, I've been to one of those before. A couple.
Was it exhausting?
Eventually, like, as big of a wrestling fan as I was, I would get bored. I don't think we stayed the whole time. But
I can just imagine kids there all over the places, like, falling asleep.
They still did that up until the mid-90s, those marathon tapings.
Yeah, they would do, like, 4 hours of Monday Night Raw on Monday. You know, they do one live, and then they take the other three for the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, because the Superstars, I saw Goldust debut on the Superstars. And it was, like, during one of those marathon ones.
And one of the things about the WWF, these tapings, is they didn't switch so many titles and stuff in, like, one set of tapings, you know, to going from three different people, like, having the championship belts, but, you know, it's like you don't even see the matches where they win these championships, and they just come out at different times during however long they're watching these tapings. They weren't like that, so.
Yeah, they never would, like, have someone come out with the belt, I don't think. They did have Luger come out with a belt after, like, for a taping that was supposed to be after WrestleMania.
Yeah, WrestleMania 10.
Yes, yes. Because Luger was supposed to be the champion then, and then, you know, that eventually got changed. Which is,
I don't know if they did that to try and fool people, because I think everybody thought that, well, I think pretty much everybody thought Luger was going to win, and so they did that. Because sometimes they do that. You just have a guy come out with a championship belt and just, like, or either he'd get in a confrontation to where, like, he, like, attacked the champion or something and took the belt and paraded around the ring, and they'd edit it to make it look like, you know, we've got the new world champion here, and,
yeah,
you know, he's celebrating with the fans and stuff like that. And,
go ahead.
Yeah, oh, I was just going to say, I think they kind of, they tried to fool the fans with that Luger thing, and because they were really going to put it on Bret Hart, so I don't know. And then there's a story that Luger, like, said he was going to win the title, like, a few days before in a bar or something like that, and then they made the decision to change it. I don't know if that's true.
It's so crazy how, like, stories get around, because I've heard that same story, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we don't have the same circle of friends or whatever, we just hear things on the internet, and, you know, it's a pretty big, you know, story going up. All right, so we have the Nasty Boys are in WCW now, and they get a title shot, I believe, at the Fall Brawl show. And
yeah, it's Anderson and Paul Roma.
Anderson and Roma, yes, which... If you'd watch, or if you'd seen the spoilers before, like if you were a newsletter subscriber or whatever, you'd know that, you know, they already taped these shows of people coming out with the belts at different times, like Contreras was saying just a little bit ago. So everybody knew that, you know, the tag title reign of Arn Anderson and Paul Roma was not going to be a long one. And it was kind of odd because the whole Horseman thing, it seemed like they figured out it was a bad idea.
Yeah, they downplayed them being together. Like, especially like Ric Flair and Anderson and Roma as a group being together after like probably Beach Blast, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah. You
never really saw them together again.
No, because it was a bad idea, but at least they realized it was a bad idea. But
yeah.
The way they did the booking, though, was so far in advance, like, they had to stick to the plan of, like, you know, giving them the titles, I guess. Because there wasn't really, the Arn Anderson with Paul Roma thing didn't last that much longer after them dropping the titles eventually. I don't think it did.
No,
I
don't think it did. It went into what we'll talk about in a bit with the thing in England. You know, I think.
Yeah.
So.
All right. So what else is coming up towards the big Fall Brawl? You know, pay per view.
Well, you have you know, they had a Flair for the Gold with Rick Rude, and
yes,
and apparently there had been something. Like, they were never shown, but, like, he had made overtures to Fifi or something like that, and he asked her about it, and she rejected him, and so he starts getting rough with her, and then she just slaps the shit out of him, and then he's got this look on his face, and then Flair kind of starts laughing and says, well, that's a woman for you, Rick, and then he starts wrapping the show up and starts talking about next week, and all of a sudden he gets hit from behind in the head with the NWA title belt by Rick Rude, and he gets a rude awakening out there on the set, and they set that match up. But the real big thing here was, you know, this is when the WCW withdrew from the NWA. So
yeah.
At the time, because I think they had, like, they saw some of these title changes, like, because I think they did some of these tapings, like, early enough to where Barry Windham was the champion, and then later in the tapings, Flair was the champion, and later in the tapings, like, Rick Rude was the champion. And they said WCW didn't have, like, didn't have, like, I guess, control enough to switch all these titles without asking anybody. And
yeah, they wanted the sorry to cut you off, because they still wanted to do, like, where they got permission to change the titles. You know, they wanted to know who was going to get the belts. You know, to be honest, the NWA title is still that way to this day. Like, all the NWA belts, they have, like, these, you know, even if they're, you know, nobodies, they make up, like, this, you know, little group of decision makers, and they want to know who is the NWA champion. And, you know, but the thing about that was, none of those champions would have been, like, an embarrassment to the title, because they're all great wrestlers. Like, I mean, all of them. And
oh,
I understand that they did the switch, but I always thought that WCW was, you know, I know that they did it without asking, but, you know, get over it. It's not like, you know, they gave the title to Buff Bagwell or something, you know
and
what
also,
I mean?
I also think another thing was, like, this was a time when you still had, like, NWA promoters all over the country, and, you know, like, some of them, they said, well, we're members, shouldn't we have, like, rights to bring the champion into our shows? And, you know, I guess if you're a member and you can afford to bring the champion in, I guess you should. And the WCW is not letting the world champion or of the NWA that's in their company. They're not going to go let them work in front of like 250 people
at
you know, at like a gym or something at a high school, basically.
Yeah, I know. Tonight's main event, Rick Rude versus Boston Bad Boy, Tony Rumble.
Yeah, and I think if you remember, that was one of the things with TNA when the NWA took the title belt back. Because, you know, they never had any dates on the champion either. I mean, at least in those later few years. And that's what another thing with the deal was with the NWA. So, yeah, they stripped Flair of the title. Well, no, they don't strip Flair. Well, they stripped Flair of the NWA title. But WCW says they're going to recognize it as the big gold belt because you still got the belt.
Yes, everybody. Go ahead and say it one more time, what it was called, Couture.
The big gold belt. That was the name of the championship.
So these people were bleeding. They were sweating and fighting, clawing to win the big gold belt, which was so absurd. And I, like, even as a child, I thought, like, wow, that's so crazy. Because, like, you know, like, I always waited for them to call it something else. I always waited for them to call it the NWA title. And they never did. They just called it the big gold belt. Just like when Beefcake eventually came in, I always thought they were going to call him Brutus Beefcake. Because I didn't know anything about copyrights or anything.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a child. So they always called him Brother Brutai. And I always wondered why.
But yeah, the big old belt,
and then
I think like the next month they actually just started calling him the heavyweight champion of the world. They wouldn't put any letters in front of it. They just calling the heavyweight. It was kind of like, you know, what WWE does now. You know, where they have the world title and the WWE title, and then eventually they changed it to the WCW International World Heavyweight Championship.
Yes, the international title. Or the international championship. I remember that very distinctly.
And I thought it was so weird because it's like it's supposed to be lesser than the WCW title, but yet the belt looks so much better. I mean,
it was a gorgeous title. And the funny thing is, when they eventually did merge them, they stuck with that design.
Yeah. I mean, I always wondered how they got to keep that belt. I mean, remember the NWA had gotten it back from Ric Flair.
I have no idea. I have no idea how they, you know, you never know these type of things, but that belt was awesome. As a matter of fact, I love that belt so much. The one wrestling belt I actually have, like of the replica, is of that title. I got it on eBay, and it's the Kevin Nash version of it, and I got it on eBay for $18, which is a good deal.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, one thing I kind of wanted to say for everybody listening, the cool thing about this show is, like, Couture remembering all these things, like, someone had said in, like, a thread that they want me to let him explain more, and, you know, I'm going to do all of that. But, like, when I say things like, you know, yeah, it's just because he's reminding me of these things that I forgot. And it's like a light bulb going off. So, you know, everybody needs to know that Contreras is definitely the star of the show when it comes to knowledge and stuff. So what else is going on?
You know, they're doing the best two out of three with best two out of three matches with Dustin Rhodes and Rick Rude. I can't remember how the first two matches ended. Well, they split the first two matches. It don't really matter, like, exactly the finish.
Yes.
But anyway, they go to the third match, which is, like, the weekend of Fall Brawl of the pay-per-view. And Dustin Rhodes wins because Rude grabbed a steel chair and Flair came out to get it back. And Dustin Rhodes pinned Rick Rude to win the U.S. Heavyweight Championship after they'd gone without a champion for, I don't know, about 4 months.
Yes, and that feud seemed to go forever, the Rick Rude, Dustin Rhodes. And I always thought it was kind of strange how they, you know, the feud was white hot for a while. And, like, it kind of just ended. It kind of, like, ended pretty flatly because they were already moving on to Rude and Flair. Did you notice that, how it kind of just, like, got, like, you know, brushed under the rug a little bit?
Yeah, they should have just done the blow-off at that beach blast in the 30-minute match.
Yes, definitely.
And, I guess we can go on and move on to the pay-per-view, which was...
Yes. There's one other notable match that they had, like, a Ric Flair and Dustin Rhodes match. It was Ric Flair and Dustin Rhodes against Rick Rude and Sid. And it ended up being a double DQ. But I remember that match very, very distinctly because it was really good back and forth, and it went on for a long time. But it ended up being, like, a whole big... you know, like, pull-apart brawl type thing. And the funniest part about it, though, was Shockmaster was just, like, sitting in the crowd. And he, like, at the very end, he instead of, like, coming in, you know, he just stands up. Like, do you need me?
And so, and yeah, that was really weird.
Yes, it was a very odd thing. All right, let's go to the pay-per-view.
Okay, Fall Brawl 93 at Houston, Texas at the Astro Arena, September 19th, 1993. This was actually the first Fall Brawl. You remember they had named one of the Clash of the Champions in September was the Fall Brawl. You know, they kind of named it that, and they eliminated that September Clash, and they just kept the name for the pay-per-view, and it eventually became just a War Games pay-per-view. So let's see what we start out with. Start out with Lord Steven Regal beating WCW TV champion Ricky Steamboat to win the title in 17 minutes with a German suplex into a bridge after Steamboat got hit in the head with his umbrella. And
Are you sure it was the head?
Yeah, because he was skinning the cat, and as he was doing that, you know, when a guy skins a cat and he pulls himself back up, how his head's still down. And he just, like, popped him right over the back of the head with it.
Yeah, I remember the umbrella being used. I always thought he got poked with it. But, yeah, it's been a long time since I've seen that. But, yeah, I do remember the match. I do remember the umbrella being involved.
Yeah, I was kind of shocked that they took the title off of him so quickly. I mean, he just won it, like, I don't even know if it was just, like, a month before. So it was kind of shocking.
Well, if you, because he was continuing his feud with on the house shows after this, like with Paul Orndorff, and it kind of was odd how they did that because why would they be feuding still if it wasn't over the title, you know? So they still had a bunch of matches, and maybe they were just using Regal as a some sort of transitional champion to go with another, like, younger face. Because they seem to do that kind of often.
Yeah, but he ended up with a pretty long run with it, I think. So.
Regal?
Yeah.
So maybe Steamboat was a transitional champion then.
Yeah, that's what he was. I mean, that was just just kind of shocking. He just won the title.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I knew what transitional champions were back then. Oh well.
Yeah. Also, they had This is like we've been talking about Charlie Norris. Not many people know who Charlie Norris is, and we explained on another show. He was this Indian wrestler. He was like WCW's answer to Tatanka, and he was like this kind of fat slub looking wrestler. He wasn't bad, but he wasn't good either.
Yeah,
and like his only real big match was, you know, like his big singles match was at this Fall Brawl. And he, you know, he wrestled Big Sky. You could find this match on any, like, if you want to, like, Google or YouTube Charlie Norris, this is the only match you're ever going to find. And it is him against Big Sky, and he beat him with a boot to the face.
Yeah, we should say Big Sky is Tyler Mane, who's been in...
Yeah.
X-Men movies. He was in Rob Zombie's Halloween. He was in a bunch of stuff.
Yes. Another short-lived WCW athlete, Big Sky.
Yeah, and let's see. Took old Scorpio Marcus Alexander Bagwell, beat Paul Orndorff in the Equalizer in 10 minutes. Don't remember much about this one.
I don't really remember anything about it.
Then you go to... Ice Train pinned Shanghai Pierce. I think this was like maybe Ice Train's one of his first big matches in the company.
The cool thing about Ice Train's debut, sorry to cut you off. You remember when he was debuting and they like showed like the vignettes of like him, like he's coming to WCW and like it shows him like wrestling like this indie match against Mark Mero's brother, like on it looks in like some gymnasium or something. But you could tell it's Mark Mero's brother.
They said this is like his final match in the minor leagues.
Yeah, in the minor leagues. You know, let's see if he could win so he could come to WCW. So in other words, like if Mark Mero's brother, you know, would have won, maybe we would have seen him as, you know, Jimmy B. Bad or something. And that might have been better than Ice Train.
Yeah.
But I do remember this because he won the match, he beat Shanghai Pierce, and then Tex Lesinger attacked him after the match, and then he ended up just beating both guys afterwards. You know, he just beat them both.
Yeah, he was a pretty impressive guy, I thought.
I liked him a lot.
Yeah, especially, like, I mean, he could get up for, like, big splashes and stuff like that. He was pretty good, I thought.
He had that Bam Bam Bigelow. Like, he wasn't as big, but he had that, like, almost work. That like his kind of work ethic, where he's a really big guy that can move, you know, and he moves really well. He wasn't
if he
really
could eventually become like developed into like a good worker, I think he'd have had a much better career.
Well, another thing that hurt him was like I said to say that like he was black. And in WCW with it. No, I'm not being racist or anything.
Yeah, no, like, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, because, like, with the exception of Ron Simmons and, like, eventually Booker T, like, there weren't black world champions. I mean, still, in 2010, there's been maybe 10, you know, like, if that. You know, what Booker T, R-Truth, and TNA, The Rock, you know, who else do we have? Mark Henry was the ECW champion.
Some think The Rock doesn't even count.
Yeah, Bobby Lashley. You know, there's not that many. And, moving along a little bit, the Nasty Boys debuted their manager at the show at Fall Brawl. Go ahead and explain
that. Yeah, it was Missy Hyatt. Because, you know, they did the thing, like, earlier in the year that some people might have forgot about where she was after she wanted to, like, manage Ric Flair. Like, he kept brushing her off. And finally she got fed up in, like, one of the Flair for the Golds and showed up. And she started slapping at Flair and threw her shoes at Arn. And said, "I'm going to get you," and then I don't think we heard much from her after that. So they just showed up. Yeah, and they just showed up with Missy as the manager, and you know the Tony and Jesse fit it all in, and it said, "This makes perfect sense now." You know, it's just all I remember is the sign that somebody had a sign at ringside saying, "Missy, did you buy those?"
Yeah.
And they focused on it for like 15 seconds, and Jesse Ventura, he's just laughing his ass off.
And if you guys don't remember Missy with the Nasty Boys, Missy obviously has her, like, skanky reputation, you know. Like, that's just, like, the internet fans. But when she was with the Nasty Boys, she looked like the nastiest whore there ever was. You know, she looked like a motorcycle rider's, some guy that ride a Harley, like his skanky girlfriend. That's how she dressed, you know. You know, short shorts or short skirt or whatever, and, you know, like, a leather jacket, and her hair looked like it freaking had jizz in it. I mean, seriously, she looked like the biggest whore. But, I mean, it worked. It worked as her as a manager.
Yeah. It fit in with the gimmick that they were doing, so it was perfect.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And, yeah, they ended up winning titles in 23 minutes, 58 seconds. Knobs pinned Roma following Sag's elbow smash off the top behind the back of referee Randy Anderson. And so that's how that match ended.
Have the Nasty Boys ever legally won a match?
I'm sure they have.
But, I mean, it seemed like so many Nasty Boys matches, like, would always be, like, the same. And I loved them. I loved them. But, like, it would always be, like, the same, like, kind of, like, cheating interference wins for all their titles. For all their titles. I thought they beat the Heart Foundation, too.
Yeah.
Similar.
Yeah. Well, I think maybe when they had the babyface run in WCW, they won the titles legally. But as heels,
yeah.
I don't think so.
All right, so Cactus Jack is back, okay? And he's after Vader. You know, he wants Vader. So Harley Race's answer for Cactus Jack was Yoshi Kwan. And Katrin had kind of explained it before, but try to explain the bag real fast to everybody.
The bag was something he had around his neck when Vader had powerbombed him on the concrete floor. And Harley Race had taken the bag, and apparently it was something like that he really cherished. But we never found out what it was. But since Cactus Jack had been back, when Harley Race would come out with Yoshi Kwan, he would have the bag and kind of, you know, say like it's mine now, and the whole thing was for Cactus Jack to get the bag back, and so
yeah.
He did, and we never found out what was in the bag, so. I don't know what the
point
is.
You never found out. And Yoshi Kwan was a shit. The match was a shit. It was a very short. It was like 3 minutes long. And So then we have the Rick Rude, Ric Flair World International title or whatever it's called. Awesome match.
Yeah, this was a great match. It went 30 minutes and 49 seconds. And ended with Flair had the figure four on Rude, and Fifi had the referee for some reason. She wasn't turning, but she had the referee for some reason, and then Rick Rude pulls Brass Knucks out and hits Flair and pins him 1-2-3 for the championship.
It should also be noted that Jesse Ventura kept saying sexist remarks, and there's a female production manager in WCW that cut his mic for a little while and gave him a little bit of a warning before they let his mic back on during that match.
Yeah, they even played it up on the show because he's sitting there yelling without a mic, and then he grabs Tony Schiavone's mic and yells into it. He said, "You don't cut my mic." And but yeah, that's what happened there. And
yeah.
Then you go to the main event.
Our amazing main event.
Yeah, nice main event. Sting, Davey Boy Smith, and Dustin Rhodes and the Shockmaster. The Road Warrior Animal defeated Big Van Vader. And this was the time, did you notice how he was just being called Vader at this time?
Yeah.
He's like, I don't know, the New Japan had copyrighted the name or something, and something went down, and he couldn't use the entire name, so they just had him going by Vader. So it was Vader and Sid Vicious and Kane and Cole, Harlem Heat.
Yes, they were called... They were called Kane and Cole. And Kane was actually spelled the same way as Kane. Our current pregnant world heavyweight champion over on SmackDown.
Yeah,
so,
and Cole was spelled K-O-L-E.
Yes. Which, you know. What can you say about this match?
This was, in some ways, it was okay in some ways. I mean, they had Dustin Rhodes, like, playing up an injury, so he went in first, and he just got, like, crap kicked out of him for 5 minutes, and you know, he was bleeding really bad, and I don't really remember much else about this match. Probably tells you all you need to know about it. It ended with 16 minutes 39 seconds when Cole submitted to the Shockmaster's bear hug. This was like, I just couldn't. It was just so weird seeing all these. The Shockmaster, he's a goof. Harlem Heat, never heard of them. You know, it was just weird seeing them in this main event. And they weren't very good at the time.
Yes, yes. So they really weren't. They were as green as grass, as people would say.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just it's so crazy how they let these people come in, you know, at the time. it's really great. So
you can say how WCW was changing. You know, they're bringing in all these weirdos. I don't know.
Yes. they really were. They were hiring these odd guys, and you know, and they were just trying to. I think they were just trying to fill the roster up with cheaper talent. But it showed on the shows. I mean, a lot of these shows, like we had talked about on a previous show, was. The main event would be awesome. You know, the main events, like, they would build up so well, but then there'd be a lot of other kind of almost thrown-together matches in between. There might be, like, an opening match you knew about, but then, like, other matches in between, like, you know, they might throw a week of, you know, TV into it to say what's going on and what's going on with this match, but it really wasn't, you know, built up as well as the other matches were. And all the matches would kind of suck.
Yeah.
But... Now we're going. Now we're heading towards
Halloween Havoc.
Yes, and one of the big things that happened was as we said also on a previous show, the Hollywood Blondes, they're going to break them up as a team. So on a Saturday night, Colonel Robert Parker comes out and he's like, you know, hey, I've been looking at Steve Austin since I came here. I'm really impressed with him. I think he's a great wrestler. And he eventually, you know, gets Austin a United States title shot at Halloween Havoc.
Yeah.
And it eventually creates some dissension between Colonel Parker and Sid, like, according to storyline. And there's kind of this little bit of, you know, a little bit of dissension between Steve Austin and Brian Pillman because of this. If you could go into it a little bit deeper.
Yeah, Colonel Parker had been coming out like every week and like making overtures to Steve Austin, and he would kind of just ignore Pillman. And Pillman finally got sick of it after about 3 or 4 weeks. And he said, "Hey, what about me?" And I think he said something like, because this was at the time coming right off his leg injury, he was coming back from that, and he said, gosh, what did he say? He said, you're like one of those old horses. When they break their leg, we just take them in the back and shoot them, and that's probably what we should do with you. And then Pillman just, like, slaps him and then starts hitting him. And Austin's watching, and all of a sudden he jumps Pillman and just starts beating the crap out of him. And Jesse Ventura was so disappointed. Hollywood Blondes is like his favorite tag team. He said, the greatest tag team of all time is broken up, and it's just sad. And, well, what's sad?
Did that happen after Halloween Havoc?
No, it happened before. Because
it
you
was,
remember,
it was like right before.
Yeah, right before, because Parker came to the ring with Austin at that show.
Yes, and I remember because of this, this turned Pillman babyface, and Pillman was super over as a babyface. I mean, we'll get to that, but they're also building up for Sting and Sid, I believe, at this pay-per-view.
Yeah, that's right. I kind of remember what they were doing to build this up. I don't know, it must not have been much, or else I remembered it.
Yeah, it really wasn't. But one thing that was really cool in that month was there was a standoff with Ricky Steamboat and Vader that led to a match on Saturday night. And it was awesome. And Steamboat worked so well with Vader. I always thought it was so great how that match, you know, watching, I actually thought Steamboat was going to win, or I thought he was going to be challenging for the WCW title, like, in the program. And it kind of just went nowhere.
Yeah, they just did the, remember they did the matches? You said it wasn't a lumberjack match, but it was like a match with guys around the ring, and they called it like the human cage. So
yes, the human cage.
To keep Vader in the ring and to keep others out. So, and I don't think he kept others out. I can't remember how the match ended.
Oh, gosh. One thing that was revealed in that bag on a Saturday night was one of Cactus Jack's missing teeth was in that bag, supposedly.
Okay.
And which is funny. And also, I think it might have been the Saturday night at the end of September, I believe it was. Yeah, I'm almost positive. No. It was the middle of October where that was the human cage and the Ricky Steamboat lost to Vader. A great match, about 20 minutes, because Sid interfered.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, so, you know,
they're also building up. They were also building up Marcus Bagwell and took old Scorpio against the Nasty Boys. Because, you know, they'd gotten, like, a couple of non-title wins against them. And so they were going to get a title shot, Halloween Havoc, but they decided to also give them a title shot, like, the night before the pay-per-view on WCW Saturday night. And they won the titles there.
Yes, they won the titles on Saturday night, which was actually recorded quite a few weeks before. And so they won the title supposedly the night before, but they actually had won them. It was about 2 weeks before that show. So it's funny how, like, it seems like they had a one-day title reign when, in all actuality, it was, you know, quite a bit longer.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. And they're doing a thing where, like, a little feud between Davey Boy Smith and Lord Regal. And it was, you know, kind of like the British versus British thing. And, like, you were kind of realizing that they're pushing Davey Boy down the card. And
yeah,
it was very shocking.
Yeah.
Why were they doing that?
I have no idea. I don't know if, I don't know why they did it. I was just one of those weird, Davey Boy was the guy that always seemed to, he would be at one spot on the card, and then all of a sudden he'd be, like, near the bottom, it seemed. Even in WWF, it was kind of like that.
Yeah, it didn't make any sense at all.
Yeah. I mean, I just think maybe they just didn't see him as big as with or as like other people saw him. So.
Yeah, I really, I don't know. I always thought that Davey Boy could have been a star, and he could have been a main eventer, but no one would pull the trigger on him. Maybe because of his drug issues and stuff, but I always thought it was very odd that they never pulled the trigger.
Yeah, they seemed like they were always like on the verge of doing that, but they just never did.
And they were also building up Ricky Steamboat and Yoshi Kwan for a match. They're supposed to have a match because of that little, that feud with Vader, but Yoshi Kwan was also managed by Harley Race. So they're, like, building up this match. I mean, it never happened, but it was supposed to happen.
Oh, at this Halloween Havoc?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right, because Paul Orndorff took his place.
Yes, Paul Orndorff took his spot.
And I think right after the Cactus Jack thing, Yoshi Kwan basically just became a jobber.
Yes, that's what it was. He just became a jobber after that. I mean, still continuing with the Rick Rude, Ric Flair feud, and then the main event of Halloween is going to be Vader and Cactus Jack, and they're really pushing hard because the storyline's so crazy. But go ahead.
Y'all were just going to say it was going to be spin the wheel, make the deal match.
Yes. And, I mean, those, I can't really say much about the build-up for those, with the exception of the Cactus Jack Vader. Can you kind of describe, like, a little bit of the build that's going into that?
I actually can't remember much of it. I think it was basically just promos, you know, just really strong promos by Cactus and by Vader. Because this was also the time, like, in this build-up when they were doing the thing with Steamboat on Saturday night, so... They would basically just do promos, and Vader would work this little Saturday night program with Ricky Steamboat.
Was this was the one where Cactus actually, he knocked himself out doing a promo on Vader. He, like, headbutted through a crate or something and knocked himself out, and then came out later with a shovel and attacked Harley Race and Vader with a shovel. That happening. And he talks about
I vaguely recall that happening. I think, as a matter of fact, I know it happened. I just can't really remember
much details
at this time. This is telling you how WCW is going down. I can't remember, you know, a lot of the details about it.
All right, so we're at Halloween Havoc, 1993. It's in New Orleans, Louisiana, Lakefront Arena, October 24th, 1993. The opening match was kind of like how I said before, just kind of thrown together stuff. Shockmaster, who is all the way down the card, I mean, literally first match in less than a month, teamed up with Ice Train and fucking WCW Tatanka, Charlie Norris, versus the Harlem Heat, Kane Cole, and the Equalizer, also pushed on the card. And Shockmaster, Ice Train, Charlie Norris won. Describe this five-star match, please.
I can't. I don't remember anything about this match.
There's really not much to it.
I do remember. Do you remember the opening to this show?
Yes, the opening.
With the kids going to the haunted house, and Tony Schiavone answers the door.
Oh my God, that was the scariest thing ever.
That was weird. And
it was so weird because they made Tony Schiavone almost like a murderous vampire that fucked and raped children. Wouldn't you assume that?
Yeah, I would assume that. And
yes, absurd.
And I think they wanted to see something scary, and he starts running down the matches for you know, like the show, and then they start doing this silly stuff. Well, how are you going to get to the show so fast? Well, I have a helicopter right in the backyard here. I said, okay. And all of a sudden, they finally want to see something really scary. And so then he pulls, like, he's pulling his face off, and then it goes, like, live to Halloween Havoc. I don't know did it show him in a mask or something like that. I can't remember.
Yeah, I think it, like, pulled his face off, and he became, like, a demon or something like that.
Oh, that's right, and scared the children.
Yeah, so Tony Giovanni is a demon rapist that is going after these children. And then apparently he flew immediately to Halloween Havoc in New Orleans. So, you know, we have that. And then also at the very beginning, They had Vader spin the wheel, and you found out that it's going to be a Texas Death Match.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is kind of like what you see now with, like, a Last Man Standing match, except now Last Man Standing matches they don't have, like, pinfalls beforehand, you know, before doing the count, but that's just one small thing.
Yes, and which is, it's, I mean, it's a re, it's really not that much of a difference.
Yeah.
You know, it's a, yeah. All right, so we have, and for everybody listening, by the way, we have 20 minutes of live time left. We're going to finish 1993 tonight. We're going to record when we go off the air, so download the rest if you don't hear it live.
Yeah.
All right, so Halloween Havoc. Next match, it's Paul Orndorff versus Ricky Steamboat. And because he's substituting for Yoshi Kwan, because Yoshi Kwan got pushed down off the pay-per-view to become a jobber.
Yeah.
And the only thing I really remember about this match is the finish. I do remember because he put, the assassin was with Paul Orndorff because he was his manager at the time. I hated the assassin. I thought he was just a big, fat piece of shit. And I never wanted him there. And, his mask didn't even fucking fit his face. And I hated him, especially as a kid. And he put this thing and, headbutted Ricky Steamboat in the back. And then Ricky Steamboat was, unconscious on the floor. So it was, a count-out on a pay-per-view after a 20-minute match.
Yeah.
It was a real letdown, honestly. Still to this day, I consider it a letdown.
I remember one thing that stuck out about this match is Steamboat was kind of, playing heel during this match. I mean, in the early part of the match, he'd take Orndorff's fingers, when he had him in an arm lock and, split the fingers, which is, illegal in professional wrestling. And Jesse Ventura made a big deal of that and said he's never seen Steamboat so vicious. And I thought he was just a little thing about that match.
He had never been as vicious before. So were they trying to go in that direction with him, or
I don't know. Maybe they just wanted to do something different in the match. Who knows? Just wanted to a way to stretch it out. I don't know.
What I didn't understand was, and I understand they had Paul Orndorff now with the assassin, but why wouldn't they just have Ricky Steamboat go over?
I don't know.
Yes, well, continue on with things that don't make any sense. Davey Boy Smith fought TV champion Lord Steven Regal to a 15-minute time limit draw. And they actually had Regal kick out of the running power slam. So, they're doing nothing with Davey Boy.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely nothing. They're just, aside from the shitty first match, these are some terrible finishes on the show so far, three matches in.
Yes. And, it was bad. It was bad stuff.
Yep.
All right, so next up we have Dustin Rhodes against Steve Austin. Describe that match.
Oh, these are two guys that worked so well together. They had such great chemistry. I mean, even when Steve Austin was Stone Cold in WWF and, Dustin Rhodes was Goldust, they were still having these great matches. And
they really were.
And let's see, Dustin Rhodes pinned Steve Austin at 14 minutes and 24 seconds with a roll-up after Austin began looking for the title belt after thinking he had won the match with his feet on the ropes. So, and afterwards, Austin busted Dustin's head open, hitting him in the head with the title belt. Yeah, this was a great match.
Yeah, it's very clear that they're starting a big Steve Austin push, and you could tell that he's moving up the card. At least it seems that way, and that they're building it that way with the announcers and everything, that he's a legitimate threat, and he got his heat back immediately by hitting them with the belt.
Yeah.
And then Marcus Bagwell and Two Cold Scorpio had won the title the night before, the tag team titles. And they defended against the Nasty Boys. And the Nasty Boys, they beat them in about 14 minutes. In a match that wasn't as good as their Saturday night match, but it was still a good match.
Yeah.
The
Saturday night match was really good. I think maybe because I wasn't much into this match because I know since they won them the night before, they were losing them right here. So.
Yes. And it was another Nasty Boys finish.
come off the top rope by one from behind while the referee's not looking.
Yeah, with his boot, which is such a great weapon. It's hilarious because apparently hitting someone in the head with a boot with your hands would hurt more than getting kicked in the face with it on your foot. This is wrestling logic, which I love. And
I mean, I can always understand the cowboy boots, you know, when people take them off, like in a bunkhouse match or something like that. That's easy to understand because, you know, you got cowboy boots and you want to just use that hard heel as much as you can. But, yeah, the regular wrestling boots I've never got.
And we have by the way, that was great. They have Sting versus Sid. And they're turning Sid face because they planted the seeds with him getting mad that Austin got a title shot. So they're turning him face by at the end of this match because he's, you know, they end up putting Sting over. It's a kind of a short match, like 10 minutes, and they're putting Sting over, but, like, it doesn't matter because losing as a heel is different as losing as a face. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. So he ended up losing the match because of Colonel Robert Parker grabbed his foot on accident, and he turned around to get Parker, and then all of a sudden Sting rolled him up. And so therefore, the new big face is supposed to be Sid. Sid's the guy that they're going to go with as a big face.
Yeah. They're starting right here is where they're gonna start building him up for Vader at the end of the year.
Yes. They're building Sid versus Vader is the plan. Alright, next up we have Rick Rude versus Ric Flair. To be honest, I don't really remember this match at all, so if you could
me neither. The only thing I remember is Terry Taylor was out there as a referee for some reason. And I don't remember why. He was like maybe the outside of the ring referee, and I don't even remember much of this finish. Rude beat Flair by disqualification.
Yes, I really do not remember it. I remember the main event though. I remember Vader and Cactus Jack because I've seen that match probably 100 times.
Oh, this match was awesome.
It was awesome. Please walk everybody through because you're way better than I am at that.
Okay. Vader defeated Cactus Jack in a non-title death match at 15 minutes and 57 seconds. Yeah, like we said, the Texas death match is, you know, you have to pin your opponent, and then if they can't answer the pin count after the pinfall, then they lose the match. And main thing that stuck out to me about this match, and one of the coolest things, was they had these graves set up, like on the entrance ramp, and with like a bunch of them had like some of the stars' names on them, like Vader, and like Sid and guys like that. And so Vader's just bleeding. Cactus is bleeding, and I think he takes maybe a chair shot, and he falls right into this grave. And this grave goes down, like his whole body disappears. He just falls back into this grave, and he has to walk up these steps to come out. And as he's doing so, he's bleeding from the head, and you see right behind him, he's walking out of this grave that says Vader. And, I mean, it was just like the greatest visual of all time because, I mean, you have this bloody Vader, and he's walking out of his own grave. And, I mean, just even Dirty even brought that up in the commentary. He said, that's one of the scariest sights you'll ever see.
That's so great.
Yeah. And let's go through the falls real quick. Let's see.
Okay.
Fall number one, Cactus pin Vader on the ramp of the clothesline in about 5 minutes. Fall number two, Cactus pin Vader with an elbow smash on the ramp to the floor. And fall number three, Vader pin Cactus with a moonsault. Fall number four, Vader pin Cactus on the ramp at 14 minutes after a DDT onto a steel chair. And and then the EMTs came out to check on Cactus, and gosh, I think this was one of those matches where he took all these really hard chair shots to the head. And the EMTs came out to check on him after the pinfall, and the referee was kind of distracted, and and Vader was up, and it says, as Cactus was going to get up, Harley Race had one of those stun guns and jabbed Cactus Jack with it, so he goes right back down, and the referee turns around and finishes the count, and Big Van Vader's the winner.
Yes, and I always thought it was a mistake saying it's a non-title match. I would always think that that would be a mistake because the title would actually sell more pay-per-views, and if he's going to lose anyways, or does that make people believe that, oh, he has a chance of maybe winning?
Yeah, I can see what you're saying, non-title match. I mean, you know, like the classic of all time was, you know, they're building up Piper and Hogan in, like, 96. And
they made you think that it was a title match. Everybody thought that was a title match.
And then right after the pinfall, right after, like, the sleeper hold, like, they say the winner is Roddy Piper, and then they announced it was a non-title match, which, I don't know. It didn't make any sense. I think maybe on this Halloween Havoc, maybe this was also back at a time when sometimes they would say, like, the title can't be contested in so-and-so match because it's too brutal and, you know, you don't want to destroy the integrity of the championship or something like that. Right. But, yeah, I see what you're saying about calling it a non-title match right before the match.
Yeah, it's... all right, so we have... we're going into November, okay? And there's something that we should probably talk about before we get to that Clash of the Champions.
Yeah.
WCW goes on a tour of Europe. And on that tour of Europe, go ahead, Couture, what happens?
Well, basically, they were doing these bus trips, like, to the different European cities. And they were in Birmingham, England, and they had done a long trip and got to the hotel. And a bunch of guys, you know, when they get to the hotel at night, first thing they're going to do, they're going to go to the bar. They're going to go to the bar and they just start drinking. It was like, what else you got to do?
Exactly.
So Sid Vicious is there. I can't remember. I don't know if Ric Flair was at the bar, but Arn Anderson obviously was. So anyway, Sid Vicious starts saying the thing wrong with this company is you got a bleach blonde haired, you know, like piece of crap that doesn't want to put the young guys over and doesn't want to have them get any higher, which is kind of weird considering where Sid's career was going at the time, since he was going to beat Vader at the Starrcade coming up for the world title. So it's kind of weird that he would say that. And you know, Arn, obviously everybody knows that Arn and Flair were shoot best friends. And so he took offense, and I can't remember what Arn said back, but he cracked back with something like, I don't know, saying something about, what we don't need is like big steroided guys that can't talk and or something like that and can't work on top. And so it kind of, so Sid stands up, and, you know, then Arn stands up, and then Doug Dillinger gets between them and sends both of them to the rooms before. They're both drunk and sends both of them to the rooms before anything happens. So I can't remember how long after they'd gone up to the rooms this happened. And so Arn's in his room, and Sid had been in his room, and he comes to Arn's room with a chair and says, sort of banging on his door, saying, Arn, let's talk about this, let's settle this. And Arn opens the door, and the first thing that happens, he gets cracked with a chair. And so Arn's down. And, you know, and then I can't remember too many of the actual stabbing details. I can't remember if
I think Arn had the scissors in his hand already.
Yeah, maybe he was doing that. Maybe he had them in his hand. And so Sid hits him in the head with a chair, and, you know, he's just, like, just not fucking loopy. And he's down on the ground, and then Sid gets on top of him and I think starts going at him again. And Arn, already having these scissors in his hand, just starts stabbing Sid, you know? I mean, you know, the guy's hit you with a chair, and now he's on top of you. I mean, you got to do something. I mean, obviously, he came there for a reason. He didn't, you know, he didn't bring the chair there to talk, so... He's stabbing him, Sid gets the scissors away and starts stabbing Arn with the scissors, and I think maybe Vader and Too Cold Scorpio showed up to break it up, and pulled them apart, and there's just blood everywhere. I mean, it looks like both guys are dying. And so
go ahead, sorry.
No, and I said that, you know, they take them away to the hospital, and this was like big, big news. Really big news. And Arn's in the hospital, Sid's in the hospital, and it ends up with Sid getting fired over it, I guess, because, well, I guess both guys were at fault down in the bar. Sid went to Arn's room, so he really instigated it and kept it going further. So you can probably blame Sid more than you can blame Arn for how it ended up going down in the end.
And if anybody needs a better account of that, which Petraeus, of course, did a great job, Gary Michael Capetta, who one thing I really want to give him credit at this time, because I honestly think he's the best ring announcer of all time, in my opinion. He was so great, and the WCW, like, and the era that Couture and I liked, the 91 through 93, he was the ring announcer always, you know, and he had that very distinct voice, and he wrote a book probably about 10 years ago, and it's like a tell-all book about, you know, his years as an announcer and stuff. And he has a really good first-hand account because he was there in that hotel. And, you know, anybody that could find that, you know, maybe online or whatever, I really, really suggest, you know, someone buys that book because it's really good.
I actually have that book.
Really, it's awesome. It's awesome. Yes, yeah, it's really good. It was one of the better ones to originally come out. You know, it was like it was around the Foley time, so when everybody was writing books. But I mean, it's one of the better wrestling books for sure. So so Sid's out. Sid is out the door, and so the plan was Sid as a babyface versus Vader. Which, I mean, you can't feel bad for Sid because he fucked himself, you know?
Yeah.
So Sid is out. And the funny thing is, the thing he complained about is what's going to, you know, start building towards. And that is, the build is going to go towards Ric Flair versus Vader at Starrcade. And just before we start going into this discussion, thank you everybody for listening live. I appreciate you guys listening live. But, most of the other stuff is going to be off the air, so we will, you know, hopefully everybody downloads it. It's, you know, it's going to be good stuff. All right, so go ahead. You know, there's a Clash of the Champions. We could jump to that.
Well, the big Sid turn came when, you know, they had, like, the number one contenders match with Flair and Sid. And
yes.
This was the match. I can't remember exactly how Parker interfered in this, but he ended up causing him the match, and then in the end, Sid turned on Colonel Parker, which led into the Clash of the Champions main event with Flair and Vader.
Yes, which is just—it's only supposed to, that title shot was for Clash of the Champions. It wasn't supposed to be for the Starrcade, because the plan was for Sid, but they actually just used this to. Because this actually happened after the stabbing. So they used this for kind of a setup for the, you know, eventual Ric Flair and Vader match. But at the very end of this clash, there's a thing where, you know, Sid is supposed to be with Ric Flair as a tag team partner.
Yeah, and they're coming up like on the next Saturday, so WCW Saturday night.
Which it was actually recorded though before Clash of the Champions, so they had to say that that's what was going to happen.
Yeah, they had to, like, on their own, this live show promoting this guy that's been like in intensive care someplace where he's just fucking stabbed almost to death, and they're on this live show they're promoting him for a match that following Saturday.
And the best part about it is Ric Flair probably is really thinking like, yeah, Sid's going to be my partner, but he says that, but he's really thinking like, I hope that motherfucker dies, you know, because, you know, that's the reason Arn got in that fight anyways. So it's kind of ironic how, you know, on TV, Flair and Sid were going to be partners It's
yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of absurd.
Yeah, because that, you know, that number one contenders match was obviously taped before the incident in England. So I don't know. They take so much stuff out of order here that I'm like in totally different places on my computer here.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah. The thing about that was what was cool about that. They recorded the shows, the Saturday Night shows, you know, kind of, they did them in order, but they did them kind of like a month out, so it's kind of weird how they would have to do the live clashes or the live pay-per-views that would kind of be out of sync with, I mean, they would never do something like that like nowadays because of the internet and stuff, but back then, they could do a Saturday Night to air after the pay-per-view or after a Clash of the Champions, and it wouldn't be that big of a deal.
Yeah.
But nowadays, of course, it is. All right, so let's go ahead and run through those matches from the Clash.
Okay. Road Warrior Hawk fought WCW International Champion Rick Rude to a double countout in 5 minutes. I don't even know why they bothered putting this match on.
It made no sense.
Yeah,
it made no sense. I think Rude was hurt, though. I think Rick Rude was hurt. That's why the match was short.
Or maybe they just wanted to... maybe they just wanted to have Rick Rude on the show because he was going to do something later on. So, I don't know. You had your Shotmaster versus Pin the Equalizer in 2 minutes in your typical WCW shitty mid-card match on a big show, or lower-card match on a big show. And afterwards, there was like a conversation with Davey Boy Smith and Rick Rude backstage. So you can... This is one of those things where you can kind of see where things are going to lead, like later in the show when they happen. I mean, when things happen earlier in the show. So.
Yes, that's very interesting.
Then you go to WCW TV champion Lord Steven Regal pinned Johnny B. Badd at 6 minutes and 35 seconds. After he grabbed the title leverage.
One thing I remember about this match was this was the first time I ever took Johnny B. Badd seriously. Was because... He seemed to wrestle a better match with Regal. I thought they clicked very well. And I always I hoped for more from them.
Oh, absolutely. And he would end up getting the title from him like the next year. So.
Yes, yes. And the next match after this was... actually, before that... Davey Boy Smith challenged Rick Rude for the title. Like that, they announced that like after the
Yeah, that was the altercation that they got in or something earlier in the show.
Yes, because of that, and they had a match between Steve Austin and Brian Pillman, which they actually this match was so over and so hot with the crowd. That not only did they put it on a Stone Cold DVD eventually, they actually did a WCW All-Nighter. I think it was like early the next year, or maybe
later. Yeah.
And they actually put this match on there, too. I actually recorded it. I tried staying up. I watched maybe, I don't know, 20 minutes of it before I fell asleep, you know, from a child. And it had to have been in the summertime, because, like, there's no way my parents would let me stay up. So it had to have been probably the summer of 94 when they... had the WCW All-Nighter, and everybody was in pajamas. All the announcers were, and Bobby Heenan was there. So it had to have been a 94. They were all wearing pajamas. And this match was awesome. It was a really good match. The crowd was really into it. And I remember Brian Pillman, like, attempted, like a springboard clothesline or something. And Robert Parker just, like, almost, like, darted him down. Like, the way it worked out, like, he ended up falling right down, and Austin, like, kind of helped spike him a little bit. And it was a sick-looking finish. It was a really good match, too, so.
Yeah,
so
these
Austin
guys had,
they were
great as partners, but as opponents, they had really good chemistry also.
Yes, they clicked. That's because, Austin was having great matches with everybody. I mean, so was Pillman, so, you know, put great wrestler with great wrestler. The U.S. champion, Dustin Rhodes, who I love Dustin Rhodes, everybody knows, the whole Rhodes family, if you will. had a match with Paul Orndorff, who was still with the Assassin. What did you think about Paul Orndorff with the Assassin?
I mean, it was just, I didn't really care. I mean, it didn't mean anything to me. I didn't care, nor did it, it didn't bother me or anything.
Yes. All right. So he beat Paul Orndorff. To be honest, I don't remember anything about this match. I really do not remember.
I remember Dusty Rhodes was in Dustin's corner, and then after he pinned Orndorff, the Assassin came in, and like threw Dustin into the ring post, and Dusty made the save with the bionic elbows, and then Orndorff helped double-team Dusty and whipping him with the title belt, and it never went anywhere after that.
Yeah. The next match was the tag titles, the Nasty Boys versus Sting and Davey Boy. I remember this was why I watched the Clash, because I was certain that Sting and Davey Boy were going to win the titles. I was so positive, because you know, first off, the match was cool because the Nasties like are such a brawling team, and that's what Sting was good at. Sting was so good at brawling with people, like to be that like kick punch type wrestling matches, it's awesome. And Davey Boy looks good. It was kind of a short match, but Rick Rude ended up coming out, and
which you can kind of tell from what happened earlier in the show, what was going to happen here. So
of course, and ended up pinning Davey Boy Smith, and Road Warrior Hawk chased Rick Rude. After he gave him a rude awakening, but it was already too late, and the Nasty Boys pinned him. So then there was the Flair and Vader match, because they were trying to. There's like kind of like a build up around this where, right before the match, Colonel Robert Parker confronted Ric Flair, and said that like Steve Austin could beat him, and which at the time it made really no sense at all. It seemed like such an odd thing. It was so odd that Austin was even involved with this, but because like I said, they were kind of dancing with the idea of Steve Austin as the main eventer, and so the very end of the match was, to be honest, like the ending of the match was very similar to the ending of the Starrcade match, right?
I don't think it was a Starrcade match. We'll get Starrcade. He just kind of rolled him up at Starrcade to win the championship. Yeah, it was just kind of like a. Like, he got hit with a splash, and then he grabbed the leg because his leg was hurt, and the splash hurt his leg. So, and then he kind of grabbed the leg from behind and just rolled him up real quick for the pinfall.
Oh, yeah, because I saw that. You're right. What I remember was at this Clash was Randy Anderson, he did this thing where he thought he was counting because he was smacking his hands as he was crawling. So he smacked one, went a little bit further, two, smacked again, three. Everybody thought Ric Flair won the title, but it was already disqualification. So that sucked.
Yeah.
All right. So
afterwards, he challenges Austin and Vader for that match on Saturday with Sid as his partner. But in this match, Sid... the Colossal Kongs, they attack Sid before the match, and he's injured, and so Flair's all alone, and Arn comes to the ring, and they had, like, one of the best TV tag matches I've ever seen on the Saturday night show. I mean, just really, really awesome match, and they leave there with the match still going on, so I still don't know what happened at the end of the match.
Yeah, no one knows. No one knows what happens. All right, they are doing these the Saturday nights, and the thing about Battle Bowl, because Battle Bowl's coming up next, And it's they're almost overlooking it when it comes to because they're talking about Starcade really, but Battle Bowl they're advertising at the same time, but they're not talking about as much as they are talking about Starcade. They are on the Saturday night they're all talking about Starcade, and they're like, well, also Battle Bowl is coming up, and Gene Okerlund is in WCW. When did he arrive?
He arrived at I think like right before this Clash of the Champions that we just went over.
So Gene Okerlund is now in WCW, which as like a young child, it was a big thing because I always considered Mean Gene like the main interviewer in wrestling. You always looked at him as like the main person. Like you think of, you know, like in backstage interviews, you thought of Mean Gene, especially as a kid. So that was a big thing for WCW. And at the time, I was excited about it because, you know, you liked WCW, and there's certain things you still liked about WWF, at least I did. And that was one of the things I liked about WWF was Mean Gene. So it was a big deal for me. What did you think about that?
Yeah, I thought it was cool, you know, because I'd just seen him for, gosh, at least maybe 9 or 10 years straight in WWF. So him coming over with is like a big WWF star coming to WCW. So kind of like when Jesse came over the year before.
All right. I just want to – I'm looking at the switchboard right now, Couturier, and it says, like, no scheduled show, and it keeps refreshing, and it says caller zero. So I don't know if we're still recording or not. I mean, we're still on the thing. Would that do that for you on the Drunkcast? Have you ever done that?
No, I mean, when I used to just set them up on the Drunkcast, they're just – you know, when we would do the shows, we'd always have a 30-minute overrun. Oh, I don't know about this.
All right. Well, we'll keep recording it, and if not, we'll just do it again. We'll just check
okay.
it. All right. We got about 18 minutes left, so of our 30 minutes. All right.
Maybe I should check if the archive is up yet.
Yeah. That'll be funny. All right. We apologize for that, everybody. All right. Let's go into Battle Bowl.
Was a boring show.
You know, it's a boring show. I mean, we could just gloss it off, like, or gloss through it. There's a bunch of random matches. The thing was, they made it seem like they really were random drawings, and Mean Gene and Fifi were drawing these names, but they weren't random. They were, like, meant to be like that. But the thing is, no one gave two shits about these matches, because, like, I mean, who in their right mind would want to see a match between Vader teaming up with Cactus Jack to fight Harlem Heat Kane and WCW Tatanka Charlie Norris? I mean, really?
Yeah, I mean, none of the matches, it was more the teams that they wanted you to pay attention to because the matches didn't mean anything. None of these matches meant anything.
None of them did. I mean, there's really, you know, Vader won the Battle Bowl. We'll just say that, okay? Vader ended up winning the – what happens was – I'll just read off the matches. I'm not even going to discuss any of the matches because they really don't mean anything. All right. Every winner of the match or every, like, you know, tag team that wins gets to go into Battle Bowl. It's a Royal – or it's a Battle Royal at the end, okay? So we have Johnny B. Badd and Knobs, Brian Knobs, beat Eric Watts and Paul Roma – the Shockmaster and Paul Orndorff defeated Ricky Steamboat and Lord Steven Regal. Dustin Rhodes and King Kong defeated Awesome Kong and the Equalizer. One thing that is funny about that match is like one of the, like, the Kong's partners like try like attacking his own partner because it's like the other Kong is getting pinned. I thought that was funny. Sting and Jerry Sags defeated Keith Cole and Ron Simmons. And then Ron Simmons attacked his partner afterwards. That's like the Ron Simmons heel turn that, like, you know, really doesn't even matter. Ron Simmons was such an afterthought at this point. It was ridiculous. Yeah. Ric Flair and Steve Austin defeated Max Payne and Two Cold Scorpio. And Rick Rude and Shanghai Pierce defeated Mark Bagwell and Dex Lessinger. Road Warrior Hawk and Rip Rogers, the legendary Rip Rogers, defeated Davey Boy Smith and Harlem Heat Cole. And then Vader won the Battle Bowl, Last Eliminating Sting. And, I mean, to think, like, Rip Rogers was in this match, you know, was in the Battle Royal. I mean, like, I love the guy, but, you know, Awesome Kong was in that match. It's just, it's absurd. So let's get to the Starrcade buildup.
Okay. Ric Flair's, he challenged Vader, and Vader won't give him a shot, so he offers to put his career on the line. And Flair was doing these awesome promos, like, every single week leading up to this. And, you know, he would do some, like, this was the year Kerry Von Erich died, and he was, like, going down his list of opponents and said, and God bless him, Kerry Von Erich. And, you know, I just thought that was kind of like a neat little touch to get his promos over a little bit more. I'm trying to think about the other build for this show. I don't think there was much of one, because, like, all the other matches were, like, really kind of downplayed when you look at this one. I don't think there was much of a build to it.
No, it's really not.
Yeah.
The Starrcade matches. Well, the other things that are kind of going on. They start teaming up Orndorff and Paul Roma.
Yeah.
Which. What happened to turn Paul Roma heel? Did it just happen 1 week or?
Yeah, he just, like, I don't know where he turned on Eric Watts when he was his tag team partner, and just went with Paul Orndorff and the Assassin.
Yes.
It was just kind of an out-of-nowhere thing.
Yes. I do. Like I said before, like, it's like a light bulb. I actually, you know, I remember that as well. Another thing that was, So on Starrcade, we'll say the match, and then we'll kind of say, like, what the build-up was to it, okay? Paul Orndorff and Paul Roma defeated Mark Bagwell and Two Cold Scorpio. It was another loaded headbutt from the Assassin. And the manager of Two Cold and Mark Bagwell, Teddy Long actually won. He won Manager of the Year.
Yeah. Just
no,
like right,
cool.
Right, but he was awarded it like right before the match started. So,
yeah.
And then he goes on, and his team loses the match. Go figure.
Yes. Which is funny. The Shockmaster pinned King Kong in a minute and a half on the biggest pay per view of the year. This is their WrestleMania, everybody. Ricky Steamboat. Wrestled TV champion Lord Steven Regal to a 15-minute draw, even though it wasn't really 15 minutes.
I don't remember much about this match. It was probably a decent match.
The only thing I really remember about this pay-per-view was